Okay, welcome to episode 39 of the Never Iron Anything podcast. I'm on a new computer, so it might sound different. The weekly exploration of a comic creator or series by the fans themselves. That's us. This week, returning guest, writer, artist, podcaster, and fan is Mr. David Robertson. Hello, David. How are you?
Very well, Tony. How are you?
I'm all right, man. Yeah, I'm all right. Good. So this is... how many times have we done this? Is it the third one? Fourth one? I can't remember now.
This will be the fourth.
I think you're right. Good.
Yeah.
Excellent. Now, it's a slightly unusual episode. We've got a challenge almost, haven't we? It's quite a challenge for us, this one. The lack of information on this comic was quite astounding. So what have you chosen for us to talk about this week, Dave?
Well, I chosen Star Blazer.
Yes.
I had wanted to do Astronauts of the Future by Louis Trondheim, if you remember. But
oh, that's right.
I think that was a bit difficult to get a hold of that.
We couldn't find it on Amazon or anything, could we? It wasn't available immediately. Yeah, no, obviously we're both Trondheim fans as well, aren't we? But
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. But we've
and then previously you'd told me you'd ordered a bunch of Star Blazers, which excited me.
Yeah.
And I said, send me a photo when you get them, and you did. And yeah. Right away I saw sitting on top of the pile this one, Nightmare Planet.
That's the one. Good.
So when Trondheim didn't work out, hey, why don't we just do that Star Blazer?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I dug out my book of The Masters of Spanish Comic Book Art by David Roach, which is highly recommended. And I was just looking through that just now. And we have it's a bit of a mystery, this one. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But there's a mysterious element to it, which we're not completely certain about at the moment. But just get a little rundown. So, Star Blazer, number 69. 16 pence. Can you believe that, Dave? How good value is that?
It's pretty very good.
Yeah. They're written by... Now, the writer and the artist are never shown in these books. So, we had to go to a handy resource, which is Down the Tubes, who have got, I think, 4 or 5 articles on Star Blazer. I had a good read of. Good old John Freeman. And they break down who they think... or who they know, I suppose it's a combination of both, the writer and the artists are, and the cover artist. So, according to the Down the Tubes, I'm blaming you, John, according to the Down the Tubes article, the writer is Alan Rogers, and the artist is Jaime Ortiz, also known as Jose Ortiz, probably the most famous of the group. The cover artist is unknown still. Did you ever look at the cover? You didn't try and work out who it is. Sometimes we can tell, can't we? Yeah, it's not an Ian Kennedy.
Yeah, I don't recognise that.
No.
Oh.
Okay, right. So
good cover, though.
Lovely cover. Yeah, really good. Yeah, yeah. One of the better ones, I think. Because a lot of them sort of feature a single person, don't they, aiming a gun with a background. But this is a bit more, we'll talk about it in a bit, but this is a bit more sort of science fiction novel cover, which I think was kind of their trademark for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Cool. So did you want to give a little rundown of what the story was, Dave? Did you... did you get your head around that?
Do you know, once I'd come up with this amusing idea of, hey, why don't we do that Star Blazer?
Yeah.
And you said, yeah, sure. And, you know, I've got about 20, maybe, Star Blazers that I bought at the time.
Right.
And I've got great affection for them. Loved picking up a Star Blazer now and then, you know, it was great. But sitting down, the idea of reading one now, I was a bit daunted. Oh my God, you know.
Yeah.
But I must say, I did get into it. And I even started to remember bits of it from having read it decades ago.
Right.
I mean, the art is good, whoever did it.
Yeah. Yeah, now that's where our mystery lays. Now, my great source for all things, the Don, Mr. Richard Sheaf, has just texted me back because... This, the Down the Tubes article claims it is Jaime Ortiz. Now, if you go to, or Jamie, depending on how you want to say it, if you go to the Wikipedia page for Jaime Ortiz, it takes you straight to Jose Ortiz's Wikipedia page. And Jaime Ortiz is listed as a pseudonym for Jose. However, Mr. Sheaf, in his wisdom, has said he's not come across Jaime, but there's no mention of it being a nom de plume in his obituary. Right, so this is now even more of a mystery that we find, because I became curious as to whether this was Jose Ortiz, after being a love of like the 13th Floor and some of his creepy eerie stuff and all that sort of thing. I looked at the art and I didn't think it was him. it doesn't feel like him. I don't know what you think, man.
Well, the Ortiz that I know, he was just called Ortiz and did things in The Eagle.
Yes, that would be him.
The Tower King.
Yeah, that's
and,
him.
And The House of Damon or Demon, however we're saying that. And really enjoyed that artwork. But I have to say, it doesn't look like what's in this.
That's Jose.
Is it? Because he doesn't even have a first name.
Yeah, I think he did. He did that for a while. Yeah.
Right. So no, it doesn't look like the same artist.
It doesn't, and I can't put my finger on who I think it is. I've had a sort of search about, and I've looked through some of the other Star Blazers and tried to compare it to other ones, and I'm not certain. I wonder whether there's an element of, because I think that Alan Rogers used to draw a lot of these as well. I wonder whether there's a combination of Ortiz laying it out and Rogers drawing over the top of it, maybe. A couple of the bits of the planet. The start off, the planet, sort of rocky planet stuff, looks a bit like it could be without some of the sort of feathering. I use noodly type stuff Ortiz says. I wondered whether that was... And some of the creatures, possibly. I wonder if it's a combination of a couple of people on this. I'm not sure. I've yet to speak to John about where he sourced the information for this, but it's quite possibly a combination of people. And I know that there's not much about Alan Rogers out there, but I know he was a bit of a sort of journeyman with Star Blazer, and he did a lot of writing and he did a lot of art and stuff. So maybe a mash-up of some kind. I'll tell you what, though. It does give us a good opportunity to talk about Jose Ortiz as we go along as well, so that's kind of a pleasure. We'll maybe go with that. So did you in fact read it, Dave? Come on.
In fact, I did read it again, and I was surprised that I actually did enjoy it. I got into it, and the storyline about our two heroes. I mean, right away it's Hawk Hawkins, and his partner Sylvie.
Yep.
And they're up there looking for Vulcanite.
Yep.
On this planet, and they're mining it almost. But they're in competition with the other characters.
Sort of space pirates, aren't they? There's a load of space pirates.
That's right.
Yeah.
And this guy, Bracco, seems to be their main bad guy. They argue, murdering slob Bracco. You did that deliberately. You've killed 10 of my crew. So Bracco's a bad guy. And then it turns out that the crew of our heroes are also shady.
Yeah, they mutiny, don't they, I think?
That's right.
Yeah.
There's one guy, they've all got weird names, Sledge.
That's right, yeah, I wrote his name down. Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
As soon as, I think from the first panel he appears in, you just look and go, who's he? What's he up to?
Yeah, he's got that widow's peak, that weird dark, he looks a bit like a vampire, doesn't he? Sort of the spider or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And he says, we've collided with something, Captain. He's making a lot of noises that sound like he's one of the gang, but right away.
Yeah.
And I think within about 10 pages, there he is. He's hiding in the corner and things, listening to them. And basically, the crew are going to mutiny to get the money from all this Vulcanite. And then, so before you know it, they have to escape from this, the crew that are going to kill them. And they end up on this this planet. Actually, I can't remember what the name.
No, I can't.
Did it even
either,
have a name?
It's the Nightmare Planet. But
it's the night.
Yeah,
exactly.
Which I thought was weird because it takes some ages to get to it, doesn't it? I thought this is kind of like Ice Pirates or something like that. It sort of takes ages in a space battle, and then like halfway through they land on Nightmare Planet.
That's right.
Oh, that's where the name comes from. It sort of crept up on me.
It was that, as I was reading it, that was one of the things that came back to me, the unease of and the fear of being in this environment.
Yeah.
And it's full of things like trees that electrocute you if you touch them.
That's right.
And grass. Oh, it's so comfortable. And then it's vampire grass, it said. And it was sucking all, you know, you go to sleep, then you wake up dead.
Yeah. And weird sort of robot-y... So octopusy kind of strange creatures, aren't there as well?
That's right. Yeah, the worms.
Yeah.
that are very violent and the size of spaceships. So, I was actually reading it and I was thinking, oh, yeah, it is a nightmare planet. I mean, it is quite...
Yeah.
I was getting into it a bit. It was quite inventive, all the little... There was little round plant ball things that shot harpoons out.
That's
and then dragged
right.
the people back to it. Yeah. I thought, well, that's horrible.
It strikes me as the sort of thing that in 2000 AD, Ballard and Ellie would have drawn it. It's that sort of nasty thing going on, isn't there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, there was a real nasty side to it.
Yeah.
You're right. It was, and I thought it's actually quite, it's quite tough and harsh for kids reading it.
Yeah, you're right.
Which I would have been reading it. And then some of the like octopus creatures and all that climbing up rocks, you know, it was just great sci-fi adventure nonsense.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt, man. And I was a bit like you. I thought, oh, Dave suggested this. I was really excited, and now I don't know if I can be bothered to read it because it looks a bit boring.
That's exactly what I felt. The idea was better than the thought of wasting 20 minutes reading it.
Yeah, and it's got that sort of typical UK lettering, which isn't quite right. It doesn't look right to my American comic reading eye. Yeah, it does, isn't it? But actually, when you're right, though, when I got into it, it was quite a good rip-roaring story. It's exciting. There's a bit of character to it. I mean, Hawk and Silver are pretty boring, but they sort of discover this guy, don't they? This sort of stranded spaceman, and he saves them, and he's
right.
He's quite fun.
He was a good fella. He was just getting on with it. He was like, let's go, you know, let's go up the side of the mountain. No problem.
Yeah. He's got a sort of jaunty headband, doesn't he? I kind of like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'd been there for years, so he'd seen it all, and he was like, come on, lads, let's just get on with this, you know?
Yeah, he sort of survived, yeah.
Exactly.
But it sort of plays into all my feelings of sci-fi films like Robinson Crusoe and Mars and all that sort of thing that I used to love as a kid, you know? There's a bit of that in there, isn't there? Yeah.
It was reminding me of things like that. And you said Ice Pirates. And do you remember the one, Space Hunter 3D?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
And it was like Adventures in the Forbidden Zone
Phantom
or something.
Zone or something, was it? Something like that. Yeah. Yeah, I do remember that. Christ almighty.
A lot of those kind of early 80s movies that you used to read about in Starlog and stuff, and maybe you never even saw them until years later on TV.
You just saw some really bad black and white photography that was in the back of Star-Lord or, you know, the odd bit of Star-Lord or something.
But, you know, I'm just I'm flicking through and I'm even reminded the bat.
Yes.
The bat creature that was his robot pet. I mean, this comic's mad, and it's like whatever they've thought of, they've just put it in.
Yeah.
So, you know, I appreciated it. I did enjoy reading it. I'm glad I read it again.
Yeah, me too. And it kind of makes me want to read some other ones, which I haven't quite got into yet. But I'm just looking at my little pile of them here, and I think, oh, that looks all right. Might give that a go. So eventually, they escape with their friend from the planet, and all's well.
Yep.
And I think what a lot of the writers, I think Alan Rogers tried this specifically, is they would try and leave it so that they can be returning characters. Recurring characters, because there were a few in this that came back you know, over the years.
That's right.
Yeah. Good. And we should probably say that on the back you get Star Blazer's Guide to the Galaxy, Venus. Next to the moon is the brightest natural object in the Earth sky, la 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 la. And it sort of gives you a sort of space fact as well, which I think was quite common for the early ones. And then later on they began to get like a wraparound cover thing going on. So they So we'll talk about that in a bit. But, Let's get back to you, Dave. So this is all about your investigation of why you chose this comic. So what was your exposure to Star Blazer? Was it sort of, apparently they had really shit distribution, I was reading in an interview. So was it a holiday thing or?
No, my memory of it was that you would see them sometimes. They weren't beside the other comics, though. They would be on like a spinner rack.
Right.
So maybe beside People's Friend or various odds and ends on a spinner. Because of the odd size of them as well.
Yeah, yeah. Are they described as pocketbooks? I can't remember now. There was
pocketbooks, I think they called them, yeah. Like the Commando as well.
Yeah, they're much longer running, which is, still going, isn't it? Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
So,
do you know the odd Commando was a science fiction one, and I used to like picking them up. And there was one within the last say 10 years. It was a commando that was science fiction, and I bought it, and it was like, oh, this is like having a new Star Blazer.
Oh, I didn't know that. I know occasionally they did like a Viking or something like that. Very occasionally, didn't they? They did the odd thing like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And I met the editor of Commando, and I said, oh, you did a science fiction one. Should do more of them. And he just kind of bluntly said, yeah, they don't sell as well.
Was I with you when we met him? Was that in that bar that night? Do you remember we met that guy?
Yeah, he was there. That was Callum.
Was it?
And yeah, I got to meeting him through a previous job in the library, and I was doing some research stuff on comics, and went to DC Thompson's and met Callum and what have you. So, you know, he's well and truly part of the Dundee comic scene.
I watched. We're going to talk about that in a second, but I watched a little video with him in today, and I was suddenly mortified that whilst out with you and Tom Stewart. Drinking, I asked him if he worked on Commando. When he worked on it, did he ever go Commando? And he just sort of stared at me. But you know, you live to regret these things, don't you? You know.
Well, I think Callum would appreciate that you were such a funny. He would just sit and enjoy that. I think. I don't
yeah,
think
he
that
just stared pleasant. At me, but it wasn't unpleasant. You know, he wasn't angry.
He was like, oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I've had that before. I think I asked him if he'd ever had that before, and he didn't answer me. But he sort of changed the subject, which is very wise. Now, Will, we're going to get to that because you've chosen a comic from your hometown, essentially, haven't you? So Dundee is where you're from, and that is where DC Thompson is from. So
yes.
Have you ever been in there, dude? Have you? Or
Yeah, I have. A few times.
How come?
Well, the original time I did it was... I'm a big fan of Ian Kennedy.
Yes, yeah.
Who lives in Dundee.
Right.
But really, before there really was a functioning Dundee comic scene, that's quite recent, as far as I'm aware, that's really got going. I mean, I say quite recent, maybe the last 10 years or so.
Okay, because it's sort of slightly tied up with the university, isn't it, I'm guessing? Is that right? Or...
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's really put an impetus into it. We're having events and things as well. But before that, I had just... took it upon myself one day that I'd had enough and I wanted to see Ian Kennedy, you know, while I was walking around in the town.
Yeah.
And I thought, sod this, you know, it's been enough years. And I just went into the reception and sort of said, hi there, I want to see Ian Kennedy.
Yeah.
And of course, the girl on reception was like, you know, 20 or something. And who's that? I don't know. She didn't know what I was talking about.
Right.
But they did put me through to the commando office.
I said, nice.
He does comics, he does commandos, he does this. And I said, oh, hi there, I want to meet Ian Kennedy. I said more than that. I just can't remember what it was at the moment. I had a better story than that when I just demanded this.
Right, okay. You weren't just sort of like angry, turning
no, I wasn't
up,
just,
demanding to see him.
No.
Yeah.
No, I did have some valid story that I'd made up. I think I'd already had some articles in the Comics Journal or International Journal Comic Art, that kind of thing.
Right.
So probably
okay.
used that as a, I'm from this.
Right. So you'd publish some stuff about this magazine in the Comics Journal, had you? Is that what happened, or?
Well. I'd published some other things in the Comics Journal. I did an interview with John Ridgway. That was one of the things.
Okay. Because he did some commando, didn't he, as well?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, in fact, he did one of the Viking ones because I own it.
That's right.
Yeah,
yeah.
I own a couple of pages from that. Yep.
So that was it, and then they said, "Well, okay, we'll pass your number on to." Mr. Kennedy, and if he feels like it, he'll get back to you. You know, and I remember thinking, well, I've done my best.
Yeah.
Whatever happens of it now. But then, you know, a few weeks went by and he did give me a call and...
Oh, nice.
You know,
I
got to know Ian and I did interview him and, you know, I'm quite friendly with Ian now. So that's really nice because he was always a hero of mine with drawing Dan Dare and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, in fact, we met him again when I came up to that event at the museum, didn't I? Because we met him in the in the workshop area that you use, is it? Or
yeah, the comic space.
That's it. Yeah,
where they do the workshops and what have you. And I can't remember how I got onto this. She asked me something.
I asked you, but if you'd what connection? I suppose what connection you had to DC Thompson.
Oh, yeah. So that was kind of the first time I went in there. And then after that, in my job in the libraries and things, I was doing comic-related... every excuse I could get, I was doing a comic-related thing in the library.
Right, okay.
So that was another excuse to phone DC Thompson's. I want to come and visit the commando office, and I want... we put on an exhibition of original art from Commando.
Yes, that was going to be one of my next questions is about that, because that was quite well attended. Okay. I think... didn't like Dave Gibbons and a couple of other people come up to it or something?
Dave Gibbons didn't, but Ian Kennedy did come along, and a few of the editors, like Callum, were there. Gordon, no, his name's escaped me, which is terrible. I'm embarrassed. But, and yeah, it did quite well. We had a whole issue of Commando artwork that Cam Kennedy had drawn. We had all of the art for that up on the wall.
Oh, nice. Okay.
All the other, yeah. So that was good. And there was a cover that Ian had painted of Warlord, and it was a soldier running at you dressed up as Santa Claus.
I know the very one. Yeah, I think it's in his book, isn't it? It's in that hardback of his.
Yeah, I loved that. I wanted to steal that. When I was given the artwork back, I just wanted to forget to package that one in and keep it.
Yeah.
But I thought, better not. That's not nice, you know.
Yeah. You never know. He might get left to you. That's cool, man. Well, that's really good. So should we talk a little bit about Star Blazer as a comic? So it ran from 79 to 91, 281 issues. Like we said, out of DC Thompson. It was created due to a 70s surge in sci-fi popularity due to Star Wars. It was described as pocket-sized, and it ran at two a month for the duration of its run, actually. It started, as we've seen here, with a colour cover image and black and white interiors and a science fiction fact on the back cover. And then from 168 onwards, it fell into a wraparound cover. So sort of a cover that went all the way around of one image. And then I didn't know this, and I don't remember this, but apparently partway through their run, they turned into one of those sort of... do you remember that book, Wizard of Firetop Mountain? Like an interactive book where you say, oh, now, if you fight the wizard, you run from the wizard, go to page 168, or, you know, it's like that sort of thing.
Yeah, choose your own adventure.
That's right, that's the phrase I'm looking for, yeah, yeah. Did you remember it being like that?
I didn't get that one. I don't know if there was more than one of them that did like that.
Right,
but
okay.
I think that was after my time of picking them up.
Yeah, yeah. The it's described as having a much poorer distribution model than Commando, and sometimes they forgot to send stuff out, and they would just sort of bag a number of them and send them to seaside newsagents and stuff like that. So it was. I remember as a kid never seeing it in the shops. I was a real latecomer to it. It's only in the last sort of 15 years I've actually bought any.
So it wasn't a thing that was there when you were a kid.
No, I never saw it. I mean, I vaguely remember Commando, but yeah, this I don't. And so there was an exhibition in Dundee in 2009. I read the article said for Star Blazer art. Was that one you went to as well, or can you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that, and that was very good indeed.
Apparently,
that had a lot of the colour.
Apparently they're saying that Alan Grant and Warren Ellis went to it in the article I read.
Right.
Yeah.
Didn't see them at the opening, but I'm sure they might have went along, yeah.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. And it's notable for having some interesting writers and artists on it. So they Grant Morrison quite famously wrote quite a few, and he actually was billed as an artist. I think he was an inker on issue 142, and I think 152 as well. So he sort of wrote some stories in it, which is always one of those facts that people roll out about Grant Morrison, don't they? Because people go, oh, have you got his early work? Oh, don't forget he did some Star Blazer and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
and I've got them here, actually. Carlos Pino, Mike McMahon, he only did one. Ian Kennedy did a lot of the covers. Redondo, Jesus Redondo, he did one. Jeff Senior from Transformers and... Dragon's Claws and all that sort of thing. He did one, or he did a few. Cam Kennedy did one, and John Ridgway, like you said, did one. Steve Holland did one as well, I think. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Keith Robson did a lot of writing art, and he did covers all in one go. A lot of the covers were, let's call them homages. I've got one particular one that I'm thinking of, which was basically the poster for Flash Gordon, and they just changed the characters on it to suit it. There's some spaceships, certainly on the covers of some of them, that look very, let's call it very 1977. I think one is just like a coloured-in Star Destroyer. You know.
Yeah, there's one that was issue 20, and it's just the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, except it's got two cockpits, one on each side.
I get you.
But, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
But that didn't seem to matter. You know?
Nah, we didn't care back then, did we?
No.
And some of the covers are brilliant. Some of the covers are straight off, you know, the spinner rack in the science fiction section of the bookshop. You know, some of them are that good, you know, like Foss type covers. Issue 127's cover is basically Mechwake. Issue 201 is a redrawing of Sylvester Stallone. And my personal favourite, issue 251, if you can find it, is basically Simon Le Bon.
Great.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. There are some returning characters. So you get Frank Carter, who's a sort of cyborg cop. You get a character called Starhawk, believe it or not, a.k.a. Sol Rin.
Starhawk, yeah.
Yeah.
I was talking about Starhawk somewhere recently because he popped up in lots of DC Thompson's things.
He was in The Crunch, I think.
He was in The Crunch.
Yeah.
He was in Spike.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so he's like a sort of freelance troubleshooter kind of. But a lot of their characters are like that. They're sort of pilots who'll fight wars for you and steal diamonds and, you know, is that sort of thing. They're just just the same character with different hair.
That's right. Yeah, a lot of it does feel quite generic.
Yeah.
I don't think they were pouring their heart and soul into the stories.
There was no, it wasn't more Cockian, was it? There was no, you know, it wasn't Frank Herbert writing them or anything like that. There's no Eternal Champion, let's face it. Yeah, I know what you mean.
They're just kind of light and frothy and fun.
That's all I wanted, man. That's all I want. You know,
yeah,
sometimes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's their saving grace, you know?
Yeah. So if you go to Down the Tubes and stick Star Blazer in, there's quite a few things. An interview with Bill McLaughlin, who's I think was one of the editors there. He talks about how Star Wars was the trigger for this, and how the series started as a sort of space opera and then moved into sort of slightly darker stories. There's an interview with Mike Chinn, who was a writer, and he talks about how later on in its run it added some fantasy elements. And funny enough, Chinn said he was very, very influenced by Michael Moorcock. There you go. And he wrote a demon sword story. I wonder where he got that from.
Oh, wow.
And he later on wrote something called Rune War. Yeah, he clearly was very Michael Moorcock. Is there any other issues that sort of stuck out for you, man, that you remember as, I really like that one? Or
I don't remember what the issue was, but there was one that a part of the story was they developed a handgun that you could stand and shoot spaceships out of the sky with this thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And I remember being really impressed with that when I was a kid. That seemed so powerful.
Yeah.
I've probably got it here, but I would have to work to find it, which one it was.
Yeah, the names on the covers are never necessarily what you get inside, are they? There's sometimes, I think there's one of the editors, I think it was, or one of the writers, I think it was Ray Aspden, he said sometimes they'd be given a cover and say, write a story around that.
Yeah, I've heard that as well.
Yeah.
Especially the earlier ones.
Right.
They got the foreign artists to do covers.
Yeah.
And then made comic stories out of them.
Yeah. I think that was a bit of a problem. That was a bit of a problem around the, because I used some Argentinian artists, and that was a problem during the time of the Falklands, because they had to, I think some of the Argentinian artists actually moved to Uruguay so that they could send the artwork back and get paid for it. It's quite interesting. Yeah. Grant Morrison did a character called, you know, this is clearly a Morrison character called Mikael Arcane. So R and then K-A-Y-N-E, Mikael Arcane. And he was a 23rd century blind private eye who lived in New Moscow. There you go. That's there's a sign on the door for Morrison's future work there, I think, somewhere. Mike Chinn, the editorial came to him and they said, well, the ABC Warriors is doing really well in 2000 AD. Would you like to do something similar? And he created Robot Kid. Not sure it's on exactly the same lines there, Mike. But he wonders, he sort of posits, Mike Chinn, that Star Blazer became a bit too out there, a bit too crazy, a bit too less traditional. And that's one of the reasons that not so much effort was put into it by DC Thompson. They saw it as the sort of strange cousin of stuff like Commando and stuff. And that's perhaps one of the reasons it didn't continue in the same way that Commando still continues to this day in a way.
I mean, it finished, what, the early 90s?
Yeah, I think so.
Because sci-fi did go through a kind of dip, didn't it?
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to think of that now, because you look back and go, oh, 91, yeah, Terminator 2 and all that. But there was definitely a point where sci-fi seemed to have become a bit passé.
Yeah. Yeah, when you think...
So maybe that factored into it.
Yeah, it could well have done, couldn't it? Yeah.
And actually, if I'm honest, I mean... when Star Blazer went along, by the time you get to like 1990, 91, it was doing like the fantasy things as well. In fact, I think they even changed the tagline to something like fantasy stories or something.
Yeah, they did. That was quite a big thing.
Yeah. I mean, it was science fiction. I would have been getting that. But as soon as you've got fantasy, personally, I don't go for it.
I was the same, man. I mean, I know it's cool now, isn't it? The whole... let's all go and do Dungeons and Dragons, but it was never my thing as a kid. I was so enamored with Star Wars and Star Trek and stuff that it became my genre of choice after superheroes. And I watched Hawk the Slayer and all that sort of crap, it was never quite my favorite.
That's right.
You know, that's very true. Actually, but kind of war went out of fashion, didn't it? War comics have kind of gone out of fashion, haven't they?
Yeah, even while I was saying that about the sci-fi going out, I thought, well, what about war? That went out. But they just kind of seem to just stick with that. That's the feeling I get. It's like, Commando is working to whatever extent it's working. Just keep it going. Keep it rolling. I don't know what their financial model is for it. Yeah. I know people subscribe to it and get, what is it, 8 a month or something.
People are nuts for it. Who's our mate who I met up with? Is it? I forget his name. Is it Colin Noble? I was forgetting.
Oh, Colin Noble. Yeah,
Colin's nuts for it.
He just, he absolutely is. And
he was telling me all about it.
It's unbelievable. I mean, to be like on issue, you know, whatever it is, 5,500. You know.
Yes, I know. But
I've got a lot of comics, but
I know you got to admire the fact it's still in Double H Smith's, haven't you? You got to admire Commando for that.
Oh yeah,
I'd like to see Star Blazer back in there. We hear all these little stories about that. Apparently they bring it back, and I'm not sure who actually fucking remembers it. I've got to be honest with you.
Well, did you see that they did do a new one, a new edition anyway, last year?
Yeah, I didn't. Dan bought it. I didn't buy it. Was it any good?
It was a different format. You know, it was a bigger book. And when I saw it, I immediately thought, it's the wrong size. You know? and also, it was reprinting two, and I had one of them.
Right.
And it was on much nicer paper. So that was wrong as well.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, I don't know, £13 or something. And I just thought, I don't know.
It seems a lot, doesn't it?
I would have thought a new Star Blazer would have been all over that, but weighing it up, I just wasn't wanting to buy it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I bought the House of Hammer reprints. Me and Jason Wilson did an episode on it, and we both bought them, and it was far too bright white paper, and I wasn't taken with it. It was too clean for me, perhaps.
The nostalgia and the Star Blazers for me are kind of cozy, you know. And the, you know, without even reading them. In fact, as we've said, the thought of having to read them instead of just hugging them was like painful.
Yeah.
You know, taking them out every so often, looking at all the covers, having a smell, and then putting them back.
Yeah,
is great.
Exactly what I do. Yeah, I've got probably, I don't know, 50 or something, and I've probably only read 10 of them. Just sort of look at them every so often. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I'm just looking at the cover of one now. Man. The Mind of Meredith Morgan. Fuck me, that's a good cover.
Oh, I've got that. Issue I'm 76. Sure I've got that. That's ringing a bell. Yeah,
it's a cracking cover.
Ah, there it is. Yeah, it's got the big brain on it.
That could be a movie poster, couldn't it?
That's fabulous. Yeah. In fact, it probably was. I mean, that looks like a ripped off face in the background there.
Yeah, it does. It could be Boris Karloff or something like that, isn't it, with that heavy shadow thing going on.
But you know, I'm just flicking through that one, and again, the spaceship designs and all that, it's good stuff.
Yeah, it's strong, isn't it?
It is nice looking. Yeah.
They do a great first page, a lot of these, I think. You get, and it's often a close up of a spaceship, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, and that sort of full page. So, I mean, I was always of the great belief that, I think because Commando does this a bit more, where it was always, bear in mind, I'm writing a comic this way at the moment, it's two panels on a page, an up and a down, a one and a two, and it sort of ran through like that. But they muck about with a bit of that in Star Blazer, don't they? Even the one we read, Nightmare Planet, it's, there's more to it than just that, isn't there? It's a fuller page.
They do shake it up quite a bit.
Yeah.
And there's actually quite a lot of quite memorable single images in this.
Yeah, there are. Yeah, yeah, there are.
And, I'm looking at page 48, right? Now, this is the one with the big, like, octopus creature on the mountain.
Yeah.
And the transport is climbing up. I thought, that's a nice page. That's a nice image, that. And you know, that creature is almost giving me a bit of a Gil Kane vibe.
Okay, yeah, I get you. Yeah, yeah.
Can you see it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not him.
But... it's like a Sword of Atom kind of thing going on for me.
Yeah. I think that's nice. And then there was other good action sequences, like page... do you know, it's quite good these are numbered.
Yeah, makes pages. A change, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, page 52, and our hero Hawk Hawkins, he's jumping out of the spaceship, and he's been fired on.
Yeah, it's not a bad page,
is it? From the trees. Yeah, I mean, it was so exciting that I've coloured it in with a red felt tip pen when I was a kid.
Good stuff.
Just to add to the excitement.
Yeah, oh, I see.
Yeah,
yeah, I've got a few.
I think some of the action was good.
Yeah, no, I actually like this.
There's a fight scene where he gets a bit. Kind of Spider-Man. Where was that? Or even like Shang-Chi.
Oh, right. Oh, there's one in
page 58.
Right, okay.
He's the guy, is it, what was his name again? Silver, the blonde haired guy.
Yeah. Oh, he does.
Still
doesn't
like
he?
A kick. And his leg is about three
Fuck
times
me,
the length.
He's got a long leg there.
Be.
I was about to say that, yeah.
Love that.
Right.
And then the very next page, there's a skeleton holding on to a canister and a gun, and that really reminds me of something.
Okay.
Do you see the one I mean?
What page is that again?
It's the one right next. It's page 59, right beside the fighting page.
Oh yeah,
page.
Yeah.
It really reminds me of something.
Yeah,
that's been.
Yeah, I can't think what that reminds me of.
No, but it's reminiscent of someone, isn't it?
I mean,
the remains of some bad dude.
That could be something out of Swamp Thing or something.
Maybe.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah. A couple of extra facts I've got for you here. So how much do you think people got paid to write a whole issue of this?
Oh, jeez. Do you know, I'm not sure how low I can go. I'm sure they got peanuts.
£95.
50p a page.
£95 for 48 pages. Yeah. It's going some in it. And I think they gave them a word count for it as well. Where they had to reach it to get paid.
£95.
It's not bad, is it?
64 page, £95.
The other thing is they used to do is the editors were really, I think the editors were quite the sort of let me take you for lunch kind of editors know, back in the those days when they used to like have a big liquid lunch. And, they used to always tell them off, all the writers said, do not put rude words in as anagrams for spaceships or spacemen or aliens. And he said they always used to try and do it and get it under their noses, which I think is just genius. I love that sort of thing. That's really good.
That's funny.
Okay, so we've named him, so why don't we mention Jose Ortiz? Let's pretend it's him. I'm not convinced, but let's pretend it's him, thus giving us the benefit to talk about him. He died in 2013, born in 1932 in Spain. He had a number of pen names. He worked in Spanish comics, Segur el Vikingo, in 1959. And he worked on a British newspaper strip in the Daily Express called Carolyn Baker, Barrister at Law, in 1962, which I'd love to see. I think groundbreaking in many ways. Not only was it drawn by Ortiz, but it was about a female barrister. That sounds pretty cool. in Daily Express. I'm sure her clothes fell off regularly, but you know, that was newspaper strips at the time, wasn't it? Yeah. In 1974, he went and joined Warren Publishing, and he stayed until 83. And he worked on Panther in Vampirella. He worked in a couple of stories in Eerie, Coffin, Night of the Jackass. Probably for people listening to this, he's probably best known for stuff like Rogue Trooper in 2008, which is the one that comes up if you put him into Google straight away, I think. And The 13th Floor, which I was looking at just on Saturday, and I really like that comic. I think it's a really imaginative comic, which was in, I'm going to say, was it in Scream or was it in Eagle? I can't remember, New Eagle. I don't know which one it is.
Yeah, it started in Scream and ended up in Eagle. Oh, okay. I remember reading it in Eagle, yeah.
Yeah, cool. He did Hombre, which is with Antonio Segura, which is a post-apocalyptic Western, which I looked at some of the images on Google, and we definitely need a translation of that. It looks amazing. He did quite a few issues of Tex, which is always the little pocket-sized comic that I always buy if I'm in Portugal or Spain on holiday or something like that. I always try and buy a comic when I'm on holiday. And they still do comics a bit slightly bigger than this, but they're sort of slightly squarer bound, not American size. In the Eagle, he did the 1980s Eagle, he did The Tower King and The House of Damon, like you said before. 2000 AD, he did some Future Shocks. He did Hell Trekkers, Rogue Trooper, and he did a Dread, Night of the Ripper. He did Smoke Man and UFO Agent in the Eagle in the 60s. And in Lion, he did Phantom Viking. They all sound brilliant. I really like his stuff. The book that I'd recommend that I mentioned earlier, which is Masters of Spanish Comic Book Art, written by David Roach, I bought a couple of years ago, and has got a lovely double-page spread of all of his coloured work. And there's some gorgeous stuff in it, absolutely gorgeous stuff.
And so I take it in that book, it doesn't have a listing for how many it says. He also drew...
No, I'd love it if it said, under the name... Jaime Ortiz, he drew, no, and this is correctly identified in Down the Tube. Sadly, it doesn't say that. No, so
no.
Stopped our investigation. I'm sure that I've just, I must text Rich back, but I'm sure Rich will be able to solve it for me, if not Colin. They'll know, won't they? It's not my speciality, this sort of area of comics, but I enjoy stretching our brains, so it sounded pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's good. So were you a kid when you were reading The 13th Floor and stuff, were you, Dave, or...?
Well, let me think. Yeah, probably like 12, 13, something like that.
Okay, so quite a formative age.
I never read Scream.
Right.
But by the time Scream had folded and came into Eagle,
right,
I was reading Eagle. So then I got to know some of the stories. And in fact, one of them was Death Wish.
Oh, yeah, by Vanyo.
And that was so funny because I knew Death Wish, but I knew it from... when it had started 5 years earlier in Speed.
Right.
And, you know, when you're that age, 5 years later, oh, here's Death Wish again. That was a long time.
Yeah. I know.
That was good.
It's one of Vince's favourite comics, Death Wish, yeah. And I know the Rebellion have put it out.
Death Wish.
Rebellion.
There was a nice collection of it last year.
Yeah,
it was
fancy
very
that.
Good.
Yeah, really fancy getting that.
Yeah, I'd say get it.
Yeah, cool. I actually think... I'm a big fan of a European artist called Leo. He did The Survivors, and he did a sort of alien environment, people surviving on an alien planet. It's kind of his go-to. And this really reminds me of that. I know it's done by an Argentinian artist, but this could easily be one of those sort of trashy Italian black and white paperback comics that you get that you would have found there. It's put a few more boobs in there, and it could have almost fit into Eerie. Yeah, that sort of thing. Kind of liked it for that. I'm going to say, I think we'd probably agree on this, but I'm going to say it's a bit like the science fiction novels of the time that I read through the 70s and 80s, that the cover looks amazing and the kind of the interiors aren't quite up to the covers. But I think, was that Star Blazers motif? Do you think that was there? Did we get that a lot from them?
I don't know if that was their plan.
Yeah.
Like, I know what we'll do. Have great covers. And
I imagine
so
they spent a few quid on the covers compared, didn't they, I suppose?
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. Well, who knows?
Yeah.
They'll have spent as little money as possible on all of it.
Yeah, they will have done, won't they? Yeah. DC Thompson. There you go. Yeah. And the other thing I was going to say is the paper hasn't aged well. I don't know what your copies are like, but mine... I mean, firstly, mine smell of shed. I told you to know when I bought them. They smell pretty roughly of garden shed. I bought a box of them, box you buy carrots in. That's what it came in the post. It's pretty marvellous.
I didn't like that photo you sent me.
We just sort of egged each other on to buy stuff off eBay. That's all that happened there, I think, yeah.
Yeah, Star Blazer, man. Somebody told me a couple of years ago that his pal, it's a friend of a friend story, right?
Yeah.
So, but he said his pal had just got the last, two Star Blazers he needed, and now we had all of them,
Yeah.
And I just was immediately filled with a feeling of, I was pleased for them, but also, my God, despairing for them.
Yeah.
Why?
You've
why
ruined
do you
it
need
now.
300 Star Blazer comics,
Yeah.
And yet I'm talking as someone who, as I've told you before, every so often I just sit on eBay and look for Star Blazers.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah.
But the idea that you had all of them, But, great. I salute anybody that's got every Star Blazer. Terrific.
Yes, well done. But your quest has ended and now your life is boring. That's all I'm going to say to you, Yeah.
Now you need to start getting all 5,000 commandos.
Yeah. Well, I like to have the little a little treasure hunt. I'm currently buying all the issues of Femme Force. Do you remember that out of AC Comics? No, you've gone silent. Femme Force is sort of... It's described itself as a feminist superhero team. It's not. It's just a lot of boobs, to be fair. But
and it's AC Comics.
Sorry?
Does that... AC Comics.
AC Comics, yeah. They were sort of 70s, 80s, 90s publisher. They did some sort of sleazy stuff. So I've been trying to find that. And I think words got round. I think words got round, Dave, because I've noticed that the more I buy, the more the prices seem to go up for new listings on eBay. And I contacted a eBay seller today and said, I'm just thinking of buying. I'm sort of trying to collect up and read like a little series of Femme Force. They're pretty throwaway, aren't they? I thought I'd include that. Have you got any? And he obviously had a look round and then came back because he knows I'm a man of means and said, some of them are selling for quite a big price, Tony. I'm thinking, here we go. Here we go. The return of the second-hand car salesman as the comic salesman. You know what I mean? I think I'm going to have to wait. I'll have to go quiet on it for a while. Wait for them to not to sell them on eBay, and then I might make an offer. Do a bit of that. There's a couple of comic shops I know.
It's amazing the things that kind of skyrocket in price,
Yeah. I remember Atlas Comics did that a few years ago. Do you remember Atlas Comics? There was a sort of three issues of each of them. There was
the Destructor.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, I think
Steve Ditko.
Ditko does something, that's right, yeah. And I thought, I'll buy them. And I bought nearly all of them, and then suddenly they all shot up in price. This is my theory that I'm being watched at all times. And there's I'm in the Truman Show, and they know when to put up the price of back issues. We'll see what happens. But a couple of end questions for you there, dude, before we get on to what you're working on. So, would we be able to do this today? I can see you doing this, man. I can see you doing a sort of Star Blazer comic. Yeah. You've got that perfect bound. A lot of your comics are sort of perfect bound, smaller in size, aren't they? Black and white.
Yeah.
You've done some
sci-fi.
Maybe
I've been influenced subconsciously.
Yeah. Do you think
by Star Blazer.
Do you think this would work today?
Well, going on the evidence of that one they did last year, no.
I think you're right. But the distribution with that was shit. I thought it was some kind of small press attempt. But it was DC Thompson, was it?
Yeah. It was. Now there's a question.
Yeah.
Because DC Thompson's often put out books or comics and they didn't publish them themselves. They licensed that stuff out.
Right, okay.
To book publishers.
Right.
So I'm not sure. I've got a feeling they did do that, but I'm making that up, so...
Right, okay.
Because they were getting pushed to do that for years by fans. I used to say it to people... when I worked in the library, there was one of the people that came in who used to be editor at DC Thompson's. And he was another guy. I'd be saying to him, why are they not... I mean, I always thought it was a no-brainer. You need to bring out a book called Star Blazer, collect all the Grant Morrison ones, and write on the front, Star Blazer by Grant Morrison.
Yeah, imagine the sales
and that's
on that.
That's a new Grant Morrison book.
The Americans are going nuts
for that.
And I thought,
why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah.
And they sort of half committed to it with that one last year.
Yeah.
But they had four names on the front, and it was Grant Morrison, so-and-so, Mick McMahon, blah, blah, blah. And it, but it was still in little letters. You know, I don't think DC Thompson's art, they're not that big on putting authors and artists' names in big
That's
letters
true,
on
man.
the
Yeah.
front
Yeah.
or anywhere.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, I think you're right. I
So
think
I don't know.
I was describing, because obviously I'm writing a comic called Atomic Hercules Goes Commando, and
Yeah.
we're doing it in the Commando Star Blazer format. And I was on an American podcast recently talking about it, and I said, "Oh, are you guys, have you ever heard of Commando?" And they hadn't heard of them. And these guys are like all over comics nonstop, and I don't think it's really got across to America. So I think they definitely won't have seen, or won't probably have known about the Grant Morrison connection. Although it is on a YouTube, I think I found a YouTube video with it on at some point today, but it's not particularly well known.
Yeah.
Yeah,
No.
there you go. Good stuff, man.
I'm just not sure that they're all that interested in doing it, DC Talk. That was kind of the story I got
Yeah.
from discussing it with people that had worked there.
Yeah.
It was like they're a multinational company. They're rolling about in much bigger, you know, concerns than some comic printing side of their business, you know?
Yeah. They need to hand it over to that comic smell to run. I'd like that. You run the you,
yeah.
you guys running the comic.
We could run it into the ground. Yeah. I had a story that I thought that would be a good Star Blazer for a long time.
Right.
But you know, there was a couple of problems. One being they don't do Star Blazer anymore, and the second being, well, you know, if I was going to do this for DC Thompson's, I'd have to write it and draw it all and then hand it over to them for them to own forever. And they would give me £95.
Yeah, exactly.
And I thought,
yeah.
Do you know what? I'll keep it. Yeah. I hate to be mercenary about it, but the way you've got to hand over everything, you know.
Yeah, I always get this impression that you'd say to them, I've written a script, here it is, and they pointed it and go, this isn't double-spaced. Take it away and retype it. You know, it's almost like that. I always kind of sense that they're quite authoritarian,
yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, you'd learn a lot of how to do things professionally and properly there.
Yeah.
And you'd learn a lot about that side of things.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Right, let's do the advert and then we can have a little chat what you got going on, dude. So over to our advert. Do you enjoy talking about yourself endlessly to people who don't really care? Searching for validation in your sad life, typing messages between the tears of self-loathing? Then why not join Twitter, a platform for true heroes? So a little sponsor from Twitter, thank you for joining us, Twitter, again, good stuff. Over to you, Dave. So what's it, a month since we last talked? We're sort of monthly, aren't we, on here at the moment? What have you got going on now?
Well, today I've been inking a story that Mike Sadaka.
Oh, yes,
wrote.
You informed me of this. Yes.
And you all know that Mike's insane and maybe not even a real person.
He's a made-up person. Now, I've met him.
He sent me that script and I thought, yeah, this is... This, I don't think this script's real either, you know.
How many pages is it?
I don't
it?
Know. Yet. It's just the two pages.
Right.
And it's called We've Come a Long Way.
Nice.
And it's actually, I can tell you, it's for that. We're doing that comic smell comic.
Oh, nice.
So we're all doing, most of us. Giuseppe's, he's sitting it out and seeing how it goes. He's maybe wise. He's saying, no, you run ahead, boys. I'll follow you later, you know?
Yeah.
So we're all you know, I've written...
Because Mike can draw
stories
as well, I think. Is that right?
Mike can draw, yeah. He can draw like a demon. Mm. And he... we've all written stories for each other, drawn stories for each other, drawn our own stories to put in. And so it's a mixture of, like, everybody doing different things.
Yeah.
In this... in this anthology. So he's written me this story, and we've not set any rules for what any of them are about, so it's going to be a right mix. I say to him, make it be about whatever you want. So of course it comes and it's like panel one, 4 billion years ago, you know? the microbes are, you know, oh god, you know, my head's were in my hands, you know, saying I asked for this. You know,
he's a genius.
A strange fish-like creature.
Well, he's a sort of biologist, isn't he, or something, Mike, isn't he?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I did read it and think, oh, man, do I need a million ref picks for this? And I was going to ask him, and I thought, oh, sod, I'll draw
just,
whatever.
Just freestyle
he can
it.
Tell me where I've gone wrong, yeah. So we're all beavering away on that.
Good stuff, man.
And it's going well, yeah.
I've got the I've got your Dark Horse episode. I've saved it for the drive tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to listening to that one. Yeah.
Dark Horse, yes. I'm sure we've done something else since then.
Yeah, because you sort of rack them up, don't you? You record a few in the past, don't you? And then they sort of slowly come out.
Yeah, we did one last week, and it was about, what do you call it? Someone like, it's basically people that have done comics that are better known for being someone else. Say you're an actor, you write books, you usually paint, you usually this, that, and the next thing.
Yeah, because I think I saw Tom post something about that, and I sent him a message saying, have you seen Shia LaBeouf's comic? And I sent him some.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so. Yes, that came up.
Oh, good. Oh, nice.
And hey, look, maybe I did just, knee-jerk reaction say, well, you know, did he just trace Daniel Clowes' comics?
Like he did a movie.
Maybe I did say that immediately.
Yeah.
But, you know.
That comic smelled controversial till the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff, man. And you've still got copies of your books. What have you got left to sell?
Oh, I've got loads. Mount a Rescue.
Yep.
What else? Break the...
Break the cake?
Break the cake. You know, there was a comic... I'm a big fan of Kyle Baker.
Okay, yeah.
And Kyle Baker, about 20 years ago, did a comic called Break the Chain.
Ah, right.
Break the Chain. And so every time I came up with Break the Cake, I mean, that was another story. And I thought, oh, that's good. I think I'll use that as the title. But ever since it's been out, I keep going, I live in fear of saying Break the Chain is the name of my comic.
Right. Okay.
It's not, it's Break the Cake. And then there was But a Dream, and there was, there's loads.
Good stuff.
Dump.
Man.
Thanks for asking.
No, always a pleasure. And so you've got that Comic Smell project on the go at the moment, so that's next on the blocks. What's after
that?
Have you got anything planned?
Comic Smell comic.
You got anything planned after that?
Well, I think the plan for that Comic Smell comic is to get it out this year. That's the sort of loose plan for it.
Right.
And then after that, I'm probably going to do my Taybridge comic, comic that I mentioned to you.
Yeah.
And then in the meantime, I'm racking up stories for my next kind of solo anthology as well. There's quite a few in the basket for that already.
Nice.
So it's just go, go, go. I'm just looking for comics jobs. So if you've seen anything going, let me know.
I'll let you know, man. Yeah, always. Yeah. You'd do a pin-up, wouldn't you, for some comics and stuff? I'd love to see a pin-up for you for a few.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good stuff. And where can we get that stuff from you, Dave? And we'll call it a day in a sec. But where can people go and find your stuff? Where can they follow you on social media, stuff like that?
Yeah, you can go to fredeggcomics.com.
Yeah.
And if you go there, there's links to the blog and the shop. Everything's on the website, really. And the Twitter handle at fredeggcomics and Facebook and all the rest of it.
And we can hear you on That Comic Smell, which you can find on iTunes and a couple of other things, can't we?
Yeah, it's SoundCloud, is it?
Oh, it is SoundCloud. That's right, yeah. Tom was telling me about that. I'm not on SoundCloud. I don't know about that one. But yeah, okay, cool stuff. Good, man. Thanks for that. And that was another one in the bag. We'll undoubtedly have a chat in a minute about, and you can egg me on to buy something else off eBay that clutter up my spare room.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I'll speak to you
soon. Thanks a lot, Tony.
Cheers, man.